Recently, Domenico Montanaro, lead political editor for NPR, sent us all a warning. Watch out. We're at the stage where pollsters are switching from registered voter models to likely voter models. Oh, and even if they're called likely voters, it doesn't mean they will vote. Ugh. Polls. Frank Bruni wrote in this week's Sunday New York Times that we gorge on them into a state of morbid obesity precisely at a moment when it makes the least sense. What does he mean? Are polls not trustworthy? Let's take a closer look. With Jill Lepore, professor of American history at Harvard and a staff writer at The New Yorker, her recent piece is titled Politics and the New Machine, What the Turn from Polls to Data Science Means for Democracy. She tells us the word poll once meant the top of your head, as in Shakespeare. All flaxen was his poll. And polls literally used to mean a head count. Jill, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
And we're also inviting Cliff Zukin, professor of public policy and political science at Rutgers. He published a piece in the New York Times last year called What's the Matter with Polling? Welcome to you too, Cliff.
Thanks very much. Nice to be with you.
And I want to start, Cliff, with your conclusion that what's the matter with polling? You list many things, we'll go over them, but essentially it's broken. And you write, our old paradigm has broken down. We haven't figured out how to replace it. Political polling is less accurate as a result, and it's not going to be fixed in time for 2016. Is it still broken?
Well, I think the paradigm is still broken down. And yes, I would say that it's broken in that we don't know how to do it well. And there are a couple reasons for this. One of them is the growth of cell phones, where 10 years ago, 6% of the country was cell phone only. Now 60% of the country is cell phone only or mostly. And those people are much more expensive to reach and much harder to reach.
Well, and Jill, you write, there's an anecdote in your reporting. It's not just cell phones. It's the fact that people, when they do answer their landlines, sometimes, you know, often don't want to talk to pollsters. And you quote some pollsters talking about, gee, what's going to happen when we have such a tiny sample. What was that anecdote?
Oh, yeah. This is coming from Mark Blumenthal at pollster.com, who tells a story about how when he worked at a polling firm in the 1980s, the response rate, that is the percentage of people, the number of people as a percentage of those who are asked to actually answer, fully answer the questioner when someone calls. You know, when polling started out in the 1930s, it was above, well above 90%. And in the 1980s, Blumenthal tells a story at his firm, oh, man, the response rate's down in the 60s, like 60%. Like, what are we going to do if it gets any lower? Like, what if it gets to the 20s, we're out of business. And, you know, as Cliff well knows, a typical response rate these days is in the single digits.
Yeah. So, Cliff, is it real? Like, if a poll tells us, well, for instance, if a poll tells us that someone is ahead, is that true?
It's generally true. I think polls are still fairly reliable. They can tell you the rough order of tiers in candidates, but they can't make distinctions within a few percentage points. And I think it was probably a bad idea to use them to figure out who is going to be on the Republican stage. But yeah, it can say whether someone's at 35% or 25%.
I mean, I absolutely agree with Cliff that there is significant reliability in polls in spite of the low response rate if they are done very, very well, because there are a lot of algorithms that can correct for that low response rate. It's just much more expensive to do it well. And because there are so many more polling organizations doing polling, many of them are doing it very badly. There are poll aggregators like Nate Silver's, you know, 538, where people are doing the work of, okay, well, if you correct in this way, and then you look at this pollster's past record, and then you extrapolate from there, you know, you can kind of come up with some rough. There's a lot of kind of money balling going on, essentially, in polling. But for me, that discussion is really a distraction from the much bigger question of why are we even doing them?
One of the other questions you have is it fair to have polls that might, in fact, then influence public thinking? Is it taking the temperature of Americans or actually telling them something?
What's striking to me as a historian when I, you know, got this assignment, started working on the history of polling is, wow, people ask this question all the time, and it has never been satisfactorily answered. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an evergreen debate. You know, are polls good or bad? Cliff's going to say it's been answered.
No,
Let's have an argument. That'll be good.
Okay. I'm going to say, first I'm going to make a distinction between election polls and all other polls. And I don't see much value in reporting the horse race so people know who might win an election ahead of it. But in terms of the value of democracy, I think polls allow citizens to organize the same way moneyed interests do. They allow the public to have a voice in the discussion. I think it's good to have some mechanisms that chart the increase in acceptance of gay marriage, for example.
But Jill Lepore, you note that measuring opinions as elusive as Americans' belief in God is kind of iffy. You cite a book, Robert Werthenau's book on inventing American religion. What make the connection? What are you saying?
Werthenau's book is actually an indictment of surveys. Gallup began asking questions about God and religion and church attendance in the 1930s. You know, he founded the American Institute for Public Opinion Research in 1935. But then he began asking questions like, do you believe in God? And I'm not so convinced that a conversation with a stranger for 15 minutes on your front porch or on your telephone can actually get at that question, and neither is Werthenau. And he especially looks at the period in, American polling history when polls were actually notoriously unreliable, that is in the late 1960s, early 1970s, and when George Gallup's son, George Gallup Jr., who was a born-again Christian, did a lot of polling about religion. Someone like George Gallup Jr. reports, Americans are born again in these large, large, large numbers. And his survey methods don't necessarily support that conclusion. And Werthenau has a lot of doubts about that. One of the ethical questions about polling and public opinion surveying has always been, is this journalists actually creating news that they can then report on as opposed to reporting the news?
That's historian Jill Lepore. Political scientist Cliff Zukin is here as well. And Cliff, I want to go back to electoral polling as opposed to opinion polls. You said there are problems like cost in an age of cell phones. But what about the reliability of the answer? You point out people who say they're going to vote don't.
In election polling, we do know that people overstate their voting intention. And that's the biggest problem with election polling, in addition to the new cost stuff. We may have only 20% turnout in Iowa. So you can win or lose Iowa not simply by the number of votes you get, but by doing better or worse to expectations set by pre-election polls that may or may not be accurate.
Do you think there are going to be changes, either of you? Right now, by law, cell phones can't be polled by those auto calls.
No. In fact, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act has just been strengthened by the FCC. I don't think we're going to see a lot of telephone election polling by 2020. I think we'll move to the internet.
But I was stunned to read, Cliff, in your article that 40% of people over 65, the people more likely to vote, aren't on the internet.
Right.
That's a problem.
So, I mean, that's what we call a coverage problem, and it's a serious coverage problem.
Yeah. So I do think that there's some light that history can cast on some of these problems. I mean, the distinction that is quite important between election polling and public opinion surveying goes back to the start. And George Gallup, when he did his public opinion surveying, only did election polling in order to prove that the public opinion polling was reliable. Because how are you going to prove, okay, 67% of Americans believe in God, survey says. Well, who's going to, you know, what's the check, what's the proof of that claim? And so Gallup said, well, I guess we'll start predicting elections to just show that our opinion surveys work. But there's actually no other reason to do that, because it's actually kind of a bizarre thing to do. And he just did them essentially as a stunt. But then it was very newsy and people enjoyed it. And candidates in particular started being very interested in having this pre-election data. And then news organizations started hiring and doing their own polling by the 1970s. So there's this tremendous explosion in the pre-election polling. So it's this enormous piece of public opinion research that is the least credible, the least reliable, and the most politically dangerous. And the only reason that Gallup was able to defend on democratic principles doing the measurement of public opinion in the way that Cliff wants to defend it by saying it's good to find out the will of the American people more often than every 2 to 4 years, right? But that only works, and Gallup said that can only work if what we're doing is finding out how all Americans, adult Americans, believe about an issue by using a statistically, you know, representational sample. But now, the only people who are polled, or the idea behind polling with the pre-election polling is, we just actually got to get the likely voters. People who are willing to answer a telephone survey tend to be people who volunteer, who belong to churches. So one thing that Werthenau would say is actually a problem is people who tend to belong to churches tend to respond to public opinion polls. So they are overrepresented, and that's a really important kind of distortion. Wider a public opinion is being lost. So polls have become a form of disenfranchisement.
Well, I don't know. There are two reasons we're worried about response rates. And response rates are horrible. They really are at about 10%. The first reason, of course, is if that lower response rate makes the poll unreliable and unrepresentative. But when we compare polls with gold standards, such as the American Community Survey and the Census, where they have 100% response rate because it's mandated, we find that polls, even with the 10% rate, are still fairly representative.
We've been speaking to Cliff Zukin of Rutgers, also Jill Lepore of Harvard University. We'll link you to both of their pieces about polling. And we'd love to hear your opinion at hereandnow.org. Jill, Cliff, ask each of you briefly. So right now, the polls have certain people ahead. Are you taking them as gospel?
Me? I'm going to answer. I'm going to leap in, Cliff. I'm going to speak.
Go ahead,
In the way that I don't – like if I'm going to buy a book, I don't read the Amazon blurbs. Like I just want to decide, is this a book I want to read? Mm-hmm. Like I look at a candidate. I sort of willfully ignore the polls when I'm trying to assess whether okay. the person's political value, because I think that independence of judgment is something that I cherish and polls in some way undermine.
Cliff?
I think they undermine the political process by focusing too much on the horse race. So I generally ignore them as well.
Okay. All right. There you have it.
We agree.
Well, there you have it. You
agree.
Cliff, Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.